Okay, good afternoon. It is Tuesday, March 9th, 12:40. And okay, a couple of updates where we're at and what's going on. I have been suffering with some back pain since the summer, and it's been gradually getting worse. Over the summer, I spent a lot of time teaching. I spent 4 days a week and like 10, 12 hours in the chair teaching. Because I had two lab sections over the summer. And so it was just a lot of time over the summer. And it wasn't really getting that much worse. It wasn't progressing. But then somehow the last 2 weeks, and particularly last Thursday, after last Thursday, I was just done. My back decided that it couldn't sit anymore. And I couldn't stand and I couldn't sit. So I'm trying some steroids to get some inflammation down. And I'm trying a number of different things and limiting my time in the chair. So I didn't spend any time sitting this weekend and seeing if I can manage it that way. So this will just be kind of touch and go and see how it goes. That's the biggest thing. So that's what I'm wrestling with. And so that's why I canceled the live lecture this morning and the live lecture this afternoon. And I think there was a couple of people, AJ and somebody else who had jumped into office hours that I had checked in. I just checked my email and saw, I'm sorry, I should have said I was canceling office hours too, and I didn't, and I apologize. I was just trying to stay out of the chair as much as possible. So I'll catch up. AJ, maybe you can stay on the line after class here. We can check in real quick. And whoever the second person was who I don't see here, if they want to stay in, they can stay in as well. We'll catch up. All right, so what I wanted to do today was to go through and look in a little more detail at this review sheet that I've got and some of these concepts around synthesis and some of these problems. And let's this be the sort of the last review idea. We did lecture for both of the labs. We did reviews where I pulled problems off the exams and showed you different problem types. So I don't feel like I need to continue to do that because you've seen the different types of problem types that I can throw at you. But this idea and this synthesis idea is sort of a bigger concept. And so that's why I wanted to take a little bit of time and I wanted to go over this. And I think that rather than just read it off the sheet, I'll sort of reconstruct as we go so that we can see a little bit more easily. Sometimes I feel like, particularly with PowerPoint, when a PowerPoint slide is just presented and it's all presented on the screen, that it's overwhelming in context and that you can't digest it and understand it as you would if it were being constructed and explained piece by piece. So that's kind of the way that I want to do it. So this is exam one review, except you can't see what I'm doing yet. Because Jason, you have not shared your screen. Okay. And these are more synthesis concepts. And they stem from this idea of really carbon additions. And the biggest idea is, you know, when we have some functional group that we want to tear apart, let's say that we have an R group and some carbonyl. And the question is, where do we want to tear it apart? Do we want to tear apart the molecule here, or do we want to tear apart the molecule here? And so we can kind of call this A and B, and they lead to two different patterns. Or there's different ways. I guess we could even do a C. We could do it on this side. We could say that there's a C. And so for each one of these patterns that we tear things apart, there's a reason why we would choose a particular direction. If we consider A, then what I would mainly consider is an anion and a cation as my synthons. And as synthons, this one's easy. This one just looks like a Grignard. Or I suppose it could also be that this could be an alkyl lithium or sodium reagent, that those are two possible ways, or maybe even there's a way that this could possibly come from the alkynyl anion if we envision that we could reduce it down and get it back to an alkane, that those are all possibilities. But the right-hand side has limited possibilities. The oxygen on carbon number two means that one of the ways that I could envision putting this back together is by utilizing an epoxide. And with the epoxide, this is carbon number one and carbon number two. And so we can see that if we get nucleophilic attack at one, which is the least directly hindered, and we open up, it will give us the oxygen number two. And then through oxidation, we could arrive at the right pattern that we desire there. So that's one sort of pattern from A. If we look at a pattern from B, B leads us to maybe coming in with that R group with another carbon on it so that our negative charge is here and our positive charge is at the base of the carbonyl. And so we have a carbonyl there that that has no other hydrogen or R group on it. It's not an aldehyde. And again, this piece fairly easy. We could envision it from the Grignard, or we could envision it from the alkyl lithium, or even the alkyne again. Might be a way to get there. But this side over here, what can we do with that? Well, there's fairly easy ways to do this one too. We could start from simply the aldehyde. And the aldehyde gives us the partial positive to make that into an electrophile. And so we can envision this nucleophile attacking, breaking that bond, shifting the electrons up. You would result with an alcohol, but then could be oxidized to the ketone that you desire. And so that's a good way of doing that one. And then the third way, if we look at C, C gives us the carbonyl and the R group, where the R group directly would have to have the negative charge, whatever that R group is. And the carbonyl, I would then again say, have the positive charge. And so here, we're looking at the aldehyde. And on the other side, we're looking at the Grignard. Like that. And those are three different ways that we can put that molecule back together, which means that whenever we see an oxygen, the oxygen keys us in that the bonds around the oxygen are great places in order to break them to do synthesis on the molecule. And so these are the types of patterns that I wanted to investigate and show you for different functional groups, that there are different ways that we can put them together. And we break them down into how many carbons we're adding. Are we adding one carbon or two carbons or three carbons? And looking at those different patterns. But this is the main idea, is an idea of working from the synthon and what can the synthon possibly be? A synthon that has a positive charge at the base of a carbonyl, what can that be? So this is the main idea of where I'm going. So then I'm gonna scroll down here and reproduce. These are the pattern recognitions that are the one carbon additions. And with these one carbon additions, I think I had them broken down with color a little bit in the sheet. And what we're doing is we're looking at this piece over here as being the carbon that is added. Maybe what I'll do is I'll style these each time. So there's my added component. And we're looking at, in a retrosynthesis way, we're looking at breaking this bond and then reconstructing it. And how do we reconstruct that? So I don't think I did it quite this way in the sheet, but this is the way to think of it, is that you get the synthons and then the synthetic equivalents follow from that. So there's our one carbon that we would like to add. And then from those synthons, we get the synthetic equivalents. And the synthetic equivalents in this case, on calendar item, stop it. The synthetic equivalents in this case would be something like a Grignard. And for the CH3 group, we could have a CH3 with any sort of leaving group on it. It could be a bromide, or it could be a tosylate, or a chloride, or any of those types of groups that would work for that. Looking at different types of one carbons, sorry, my wife is adding like a bazillion calendar items all of a sudden. Looking at different types of carbons when we do the additions, if we put in the new bond, and then here what we do is we add in a CH3 plus an OH. So we're still looking at that one carbon that's being added here. And as we break that up into the synthons, we're in the same boat always with the anion. It's just a difference in what happens with the cation portion. And the synthons for that cation portion, in this case, what we do is we sort of use resonance, or a resonance idea of the lone pairs, of pushing the lone pairs in to generate something that is a carbonyl that has that same partial positive. It's this thing here, which is allowing them both to function as electrophiles and to do the job that we want it to do. When we take a look at breaking a bond, where maybe what we have is an aldehyde in this position, the synthetic equivalents are still the same. There's nothing that's really changing here. All these patterns are the exact same pattern. What I can envision doing from this one is using the same formaldehyde as my starting point, because it's ultimately going to give me the alcohol, and then I oxidize it up to the aldehyde. So maybe what I could do is maybe I can modify this a little bit and say that these are not only my synthetic equivalents, but maybe these are my reactions that I need to do. One, I need to react with formaldehyde, and two, I just need dilute acid to acidify. And that would result in the alcohol. In the second one that I'm doing here with the aldehyde, if I react it first with the aldehyde, I would get the alcohol, and then I need to do the oxidation step. And I need to oxidize it back up to the aldehyde. So I would use PCC or PDC or SWERN or some second step like that to reoxidize it, to get it back up to the carbonyl. Would you have to have a pressurized vessel or something to react with the aldehyde? No, aldehydes actually are extremely reactive, and we don't need anything in order to make it do this reaction. It's actually, oh, because you're thinking it's a gas and that the aldehyde is a gas. Formaldehyde is a gas, but it is also highly soluble in solvents. And so it's very soluble in alcohols. It's very soluble in water. It's very soluble in a number of different things. And so oftentimes what we do is we don't use a high pressure, but we bubble it through the solution as a gas, and then it dissolves into the solution. And that's one way to get it to go in. Or sometimes we make a solution of a particular concentration, and then we add that solution as a way of adding it into the chemical reaction. So those are good questions, Keegan. I see where you're going with that. Okay, from the aldehyde, we could also look at wanting to make a carboxylic acid. And so what if my one carbon that I'm adding needs to be a carboxylic acid and oxidized in this way? My synthetic equivalents are still pretty much the same. What I need here, though, is to envision what this equivalent is. And there's two ways to do this. So this one has two options. A, you can take and you can react it with CO2. And then you can use dilute acid after that. And the reaction with CO2, similarly, a gas that can be bubbled through a solution in order to be reacted with a Grignard or an alkyl lithium reagent. It would attack the CO2, break one of the bonds open. You'd have an O minus, you'd have a carboxylate. The dilute acid then protonates it. So those are those steps. The second way is to use the same aldehyde that we were using before, formaldehyde, to add the one carbon. And then two, to do a Jones reagent. And to oxidize it all the way up to a carboxylic acid using Jones. And so two different ways of adding the two carbons, or the one carbon. What if we want to make an ether? So now we're looking at making some ether. And this pretty much is, so far, all of the functional groups that we've dealt with. Again, we have R minus, and this time what we have is OR with a positive charge. Okay, for this one is very similar to the first one that we did, where we were looking at having the alcohol and we wanted to make the alcohol. From this one, what we would do is we would make the alcohol first and then we would attach the R group second. So you could do it this way, where you react with the formaldehyde. And then instead of dilute acid, you take the O minus that you've created and you react it with the alkyl halide or with the tosylate in order to be able to add in the R group. That's another way to be able to do that one. So all of those are all single one carbon additions, just different oxidation states of the one carbon that we've added. And so what we're seeing is that if you don't need the oxygen on it, you could just use a methyl group. But if you need the oxygen, then almost always you can do it from formaldehyde, which is just a one carbon carbonyl. And that's how you bring in that one carbon. Sometimes you could do it with CO2. And then the different oxidation states are achieved either by dilute acid to protonate, PCC or PDC to get the aldehyde back, or Jones to take it all the way up to a carboxylic acid. Does that look a little more familiar when we do it that way and padding them all together? So JC, this one was the Williamson. What we're doing here is the second step is combining the R and the O minus with the alkyl halide, and that is the Williamson. So we incorporated the Williamson into that. Yes, that's exactly what we just did. Okay, the two carbon patterns are a little more complicated. But not substantially so. So what we have first is just putting in the two carbons. And so looking at trying to break this bond here and taking it back to the synthons. So the synthons that we get are the R minus and the two carbon chain with the plus. And again, that's just going back to some Grignard as a convenient way of doing that. And then for the two carbon component, we have some leaving group on it. That leaving group could be a halide, or it could be a tosylate. So I'm using different forms of representation to represent that leaving group, but we're essentially just using an SN2 reaction to put that back together. And we're saying that in this case, what we're looking at is carbon number one and carbon number two. There's one and two. And this time I flipped it around because I put the leaving group to the right-hand side to make it a little bit easier to write, but that's why I'm going back in and putting the numbers in there. Okay, from here, what we can do is we can look at a two carbon chain where we have an alcohol in that part of the carbon chain. And the numbering system that I'm going to use again is one and two. I'll keep the same numbering system, so I won't change that. Get R minus there, OH, the positive at the base, and the numbers, which are one and two. This one is going to look like the aldehyde. That gives us our partial positive and the carbon that we're attacking. The carbon numbers are still number one and number two. And then after that, we would simply use dilute acid. And that's how we envision that one going together. Yeah, I'm going to keep them all patterned this way. Let's do the next one. where I'm rethinking my order and just thinking if my order really makes sense. And I think it does. I'm just going to leave it in the same order. Okay, so R minus OR, positive charge, carbons number 1 and 2. This is the exact same pattern that we have going on up here. It's just that we do the Williamson ether synthesis after we make the O minus. And so instead of doing the dilute acid step, we change to add in this second R group. And so you'll see that these patterns are all really conserved. We use a 2-carbon chunk. We then, instead of dilute acid, bring in RX in order to do the Williamson. This one, I couldn't do an epoxide for. I was going to compare it to the epoxide in a minute, JC. So I've got one more after this, and then I'll show you the epoxide pattern and we'll compare it and see how that compares to this pattern. And I'll show you why we can't do it. But let me do it in a minute. So hang on to that question. Okay, the next one is where we have the oxidized carbon here, and we would like to break this bond. Let's see if this works out a little better. Okay, so in breaking this, we end up with the pattern where we have the positive charge at the base of the carbonyl. And this is the exact same pattern again. We use the same aldehyde. This is a C aldehyde, by the way. And then two, we oxidize back up. And we could use any of the oxidizing reagents because we're not making an aldehyde. This time we're making a ketone. So we can use oxidizing reagents that are appropriate to making a ketone. That means that we could use any of them that are appropriate. We can use Jones, we could use PCC, we could use PDC, we could use SWERN. Any of those, as long as the rest of the molecule, as long as the functional groups in the rest of the molecule could tolerate it, we could use any oxidizing agent to oxidize this back up, because we're trying to achieve this functional group, which is a ketone. And so Jones will oxidize a secondary alcohol to a ketone. PCC, PDC will oxidize a secondary alcohol to a ketone. SWERN will oxidize a secondary alcohol to a ketone. There's no limit in terms of which oxidizing agent we choose in order to be able to do this one, which is kind of nice. All right, so now, this next pattern, this next idea. Notice too that what I did is this is carbon number 1 and 2. Oxygen is always on carbon number 1 for these three patterns. And these three patterns where oxygen is on number 1 all go through the same synthetic equivalent. They all go through the aldehyde. And that's what's unique about this pattern. Oxygen on atom number 1. And that means these all go through aldehyde as electrophile. That's the big thing. Okay, so we'll do a little break here. And we're going to change the pattern up a little bit. The pattern that we're going to change is the location of the oxygen. We're going to connect oxygen on carbon number 2. And we're looking at breaking the bond here. So our synthetic equivalents, when we tear this apart, now what we've got is the OH and the positive charge on number 1, but the oxygen on number 2. This is the epoxide pattern. This is the pattern where we consider the electrons on the oxygen to close up with the positive charge, resulting in an epoxide. And we are number 1 and number 2. And then because we're making an alcohol, we would use dilute acid in order to protonate it after it opens up. We then go through the same patterns as before, except now oxygen on number 2. We can go through the aldehyde pattern. This is an aldehyde pattern where the oxygen is on number 2. And because the oxygen is on number 2, it goes through the same addition pattern as the alcohol one did. We just have an oxidation step at the end, and we have to choose the right oxidizing agent. So in this case, what we do is we do 1, the epoxide, and then number 2, we would choose an oxidizing agent that is going to stop at the aldehyde. So we want to choose PCC, PDC, or Swerner. And that would reoxidize it and stop at the aldehyde. If we wanted to capture that, well, okay, I'm off sequence. Let's go ahead and say I wanted to oxidize it one step further. Let's say I wanted to go to the carboxylic acid. How does it change? It's the same pattern. I just choose a different oxidizing agent at the end. So I'm still at 1 and 2. I'm still splitting here. Same pattern in looking at the location of my groups. And the same pattern here where I use the epoxide. But then here I would use Jones in order to oxidize all the way back up to the carboxylic acid. And the one pattern that I left off of this that I want to go back and catch is the ether. And that this pattern is no different. And I just use that Williamson ether again, synthesis. I treat this as an epoxide. And then upon opening, I treat it with whatever alkyl halide I want, where this is the Williamson. So these guys, all of these guys here, are all oxygen on number two. All use epoxide pattern. And then either the oxidations or the Williamson ether synthesis at the end of that pattern. Is this making a little more sense now as we sort of break it down? And then the three carbon patterns really aren't any different. The three carbon patterns, all they do is extend this out a little bit more. And there's a couple more patterns that fall into this from the three carbon patterns. And I'm almost hesitant to go through. I think that maybe what I can do is break it down even a little bit simpler in terms of three carbon patterns. Let's say three or more carbon patterns. There's really three different patterns here. So let's look at just grouping these patterns together. The three carbon patterns that happen are where the oxygen is in that position. Or we have an oxygen that is in that position, or the last one is where the oxygen is in the epoxide pattern position. So these are your three main patterns. And then from these develop into families. And so these are sort of like the head of the families. Just like we had all the other oxidation patterns, these have all the oxidation patterns that go along with them. So what are these patterns and how are we looking at these? It's one, two, and three, where oxygen is on one. It's one, two, and three. This pattern is a little bit harder. Oxygen is on two, but the attachment is also at two. So let's say oxygen on one, attachment at one. Maybe that's the best way to do this. This is oxygen on number two, attachment on number two, and then oxygen on number two, attachment at one. So those are your three big different patterns. These guys, the synthon, is that guy, which is equal to the aldehyde. The other one, the synthon, is that guy, which is equal to the ketone. And the last one, the synthon, is that guy, which is equal to the epoxide. And so you have an aldehyde pattern, a ketone pattern, and an epoxide pattern. And then it's just a matter of what we do in our second step. Do we use dilute acid to get an alcohol? Do we oxidize to get a carbonyl? Do we do an alkyl halide in order to make a Williamson ether synthesis? And it allows you access into all those different functional groups. So inside of here, instead of breaking it all down, maybe what we can do is we can just say, look, this is the same. Pattern in order to be able to do that with, or the same pattern to be able to do that with. So these guys fall under that same pattern where the new bond is there and the group that we're adding in. Looks like that. It just depends on what we change that second step to. The ketone pattern really only has one additional. We can do a Williamson with this, but then we're sort of limited because we can't oxidize it. It's tertiary alcohol. So there's no oxidation of tertiary alcohol. So what we can do here is we can make the new bond. And we can do a Williamson where we can get an R prime on there, but then we're sort of tapped out. The epoxide pattern gives us more options because we can make the alcohol, we can make the ether, or we can make the ketone. Actually, I only need the two more because... And then we can take, and we can make the ketone, or we could do the Williamson ether synthesis, and all of those are the same. And so we have the three different patterns that those can come from. How is that looking in terms of pattern recognition? Yes, absolutely. Let's do that. I think that's a perfect time for what we need to do. Okay. So I'm hearing requests for applications, and let's see these put together and put to use and see what we can do with this. Let's go ahead and say that we want to synthesize, so we'll just pull from the first problem here. And the handle that you've got in this one is the five-membered ring system. And the carbons that are of that five-membered ring system there. So we've got the two carbons that are there. What we can envision doing is we can envision clipping this in a retrosynthesis way here. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to preserve the carbons that are of this system. So we have carbons that are here, one and two, one and two. Or let's actually turn them around and label them this way. B because that'll be our point of attachment, that as we break this apart and we look at the synthons, what I find is I'm getting, I'm getting a positive charge on that position. This is carbon number one, the oxygen is on number two. And for the other half of the molecule, I'm getting a negative charge that is on the double bond. And so what I can think of is that this pattern here, where I have a carbonyl, an oxygen on carbon number two, adjacent to a positive charge, that is a synthon with a synthetic equivalent of an epoxide. And the other one could have synthetic equivalents, multiple synthetic equivalents. One, probably the easiest, is to take this back to an alkynyl anion, because that's how we can easily get the anion. And now that we see the pattern and how we broke this apart, we haven't done a full retrosynthesis, but this gives us an idea of what that full retrosynthesis is going to look like and how we're going to pull this thing apart and do it, and the main step that is going to be used to put it back together. So let's watch and see how this goes back together. What I can do is take and use MCPBA to make the epoxide. The epoxide is then reacted with sodium acetylide. And that'll be the first step. Number two, we'll use dilute acid in order to protonate. That'll give us the alcohol and the carbons that we wanted to add. We would then maybe go through and do a reduction where we have to reduce this, and we want to get a trans configuration in that reduction. So I need to use the dissolving metals reaction to get that trans configuration. So I would use sodium and liquid ammonia. And then finally, an oxidation step to oxidize this up. And we could use any of the oxidizing agents, Jones, or PCC, or PDC, any of them would work. And we're done. But the key step was the recognition of where to break this molecule. And once I do break it, what is the synthon and what is the synthetic equivalent that allow me to put it back together? So where do I break it? What does that give me in terms of synthons? So that's the pattern that we use here. Let's do another one.
Will you show the bottom of that for a moment again?
Yeah. Here, let me zoom out so that you can see the whole slide.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, let's try utilizing this again. On something slightly more complicated. Not much more, it's a progression. So I'm only changing a little thing. It's not going to look like I'm changing only a little thing. I want to make that molecule. Okay, so the first thing is We'll write down the steps as we're doing it. Number one, find the handle. That's my sort of code word for map the problem out. Map your carbons, figure out where they are. So what I'm looking at is I've got the same number of carbons and functional group in this molecule as I had in the last. And that my number of carbons really hasn't changed. And because of that, if I don't want to throw any carbons away, there are other alternatives synthetically to doing this. But if I don't want to throw any carbons away and I want to utilize all the carbons in my framework, that's where I'm going to wind up breaking this bond. Now, did you see it before I did it? Or did I do it too fast? Or does it look a little more obvious now that I've drawn it out? Now, this problem is more complicated than this. This is the planning stage. This is what I would call here. What I'm doing here is I'm using the planning stage. And we're going to go through an epoxide pattern because oxygen is on two, connection on one. But now we need to do the full retrosynthesis. And we may need to do some protection and deprotection strategies because we also have a problem. This guy is going to present a problem because of the hydrogen that's on the oxygen there, that we're not going to be able to make a carbon-carbon bond with the oxygen on there, with the hydrogen on the oxygen. Made sense not to scrap what you can use. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so in a retrosynthesis way, if I do a full retrosynthesis on this, I'm gonna deal with that oxygen and I'm gonna say that I have some protecting group that is sitting on that oxygen. That protecting group was on there when I made the carbon-carbon bond. And so now what I'll do, oops, is disconnect and go back to the epoxide. And that protecting group's still on there. And this guy maybe comes from a granule. The epoxide would have come from the alkene. And the protecting group would have come directly from the alcohol. And I just need to decide what protecting group is appropriate. I'm using strong base. I want a protecting group that can survive strong base. The only one that's out really is no ester types. So we can do the silicon type is okay. The monacetal type is okay. The benzoyl No, not the benzoyl. The benzyl is okay. So benzoyl is BZ. I'll just write it out. Those are our three different types. The ester type was our fourth type. So we could do any of those others, just not the ester or what is the benzoyl. That one is out. So once we've made those decisions, then we can go ahead and we can put this together in the forward direction. Let's make it simple. And let's put a TMS protecting group. Let's make the epoxide. Let's react that epoxide, bringing in our Grignard. So number one, we'll bring in the Grignard. Number two, we'll use dilute acid. And then we remove the protecting group. Using the conditions appropriate to remove the TMS, which is the TBAF. And so there's our overall strategy. So you see how this was related to the last one, how similar these two problems were. We just had to use a protection and deprotection strategy. All the problems that we're doing are identical to that. Number four is a little different though. Let's just a little bit so. Let's show you this one. So far in these patterns, what we've been doing is we've been making the epoxide. And doing an epoxide pattern. These are all set up to sort of be the epoxide pattern. This one's not different in that way. It's different in that it was set up to make it look like an epoxide of one type, but it's a slightly different type. Find the handle. Map it out. Where's the handle?
I mean, if I could circle it, I'd show you.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm thinking that you're looking at this group.
Yes.
And that would be called the isopropyl group. So we tag the isopropyl group as sort of being the handle, and then we follow it through the carbons and we get the same number of carbons. So one way to do that is to come out here and to number it this way, and then to number it left to right, all the way through carbon number four, this group up here is sitting up on top. So that's sort of like our orientation of where everything is. And that means that the bond that we're going to break is going to be there. And if that's the bond we're going to break, then when we look at this molecule and we take this molecule back, then I'm going to get these two pieces and I need to decide plus and minus. And what we've been doing is the piece with the oxygen, we've been calling the plus, and the other piece we've been calling the minus. And all of a sudden now, what you can see is that where the plus charge is residing and where the oxygen is residing, always putting your number one where the positive charge is and numbering out from that way, that this piece, the piece that you're adding, is coming from an epoxide. And that the piece that you're starting with is going to be your nucleophile. See the difference? The piece that we were starting with in the past two problems, in the previous two problems, was always our electrophile. But this time, even though it has the double bond, and we could turn that into an epoxide, we're going to use that double bond to get a different sort of functional group in order to turn this into a grignard. And so what we're envisioning happening here now is we're envisioning a grignard reacting with an epoxide. And that's the vision for this molecule. So this one, we could do the whole retrosynthesis, but there's no protecting groups to deal with. This one's actually fairly straightforward. We just need to work backwards in our mind from the grignard. That's not too bad. We need to get the terminal bromide on there. What reagent allows me to do that? HBr and peroxide. Yes, JC. I then want to make the grignard. That's the easy part. From the grignard, I then desire to react this with the epoxide number one. And number two, we should use dilute acid in order to protonate once it opens up. Now, here's where I would be careful in maybe using some numbering system or something in order to track and make sure that you're doing the right thing so that you don't get lost. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So 4 is connected to 5 as intended. And I have 5, 6, 7. And I don't have any 8. There's no more carbons. I've accounted for everything. The last thing that we need to do is we need to oxidize that back up to the ketone. And so any oxidizing agent would be appropriate. Because I'm just trying to go back to a ketone, and that's the most oxidized that secondary alcohol can be. I can use any oxidizing agent. I can use Jones or PCC or PDC or even Swern, and it would work just fine. Okay. Let's try, oh, are you guys caught up? Are we good? Checking in, okay. Let's try a new pattern. And then from this new pattern, we'll do this one quickly. And then I'll give you a slightly more complicated one. Let's see if we can fit one more complicated one in. So this will establish our pattern. Again, you find the handle. It's your cyclopentane with the one carbon. Cyclopentane with the one carbon. That means that we're breaking at that position once we find that handle and map it out. We backtrack it and we decide which side will be our nucleophile and which side will be our electrophile. With the carbon, with the oxygen, I would always choose the side with the oxygen in general to be the one that is going to have the positive charge on it. So that's going to be our electrophile. And the other side, I would give the negative and choose that to be the nucleophile. Okay, from there, what we can see is that this is just adding one carbon and that probably the appropriate piece is formaldehyde. And that the other one, I'm going to use three bonds because I like to use the equivalent equals rather than just an equal sign. This could be MgBr is probably the easiest way to do that. Now that might be difficult to figure out how we're going to get the bromide in the position where we want it. But that's what we've got to do is we've got to get a negative charge out on that terminal end in order to be able to put this together. So from there, we can see how to do this. All right, so let me give you the steps. You give me the reagents. What I first want to do is I want to take this unfunctionalized methyl cyclopentane and I want to functionalize it and I want to put a bromide in that location. How do I do that? This comes from the free radical chapter. We're functionalizing Br2 and light. That's it. That's all it is. Br2 and light. Then what I would like to do is I would like to create that double bond. So this double bond that I'm trying to make is the kinetic double bond, rather than the thermodynamics. So I don't want to, let's see, well, I'll ask you guys, how do I want to do this? What reagent do I want to do? I want to do an E2, a controlled E2 reaction where I pull specifically the proton on the methyl group. What base do I choose? A bulky base, correct, bulky. AJ, correct. Nice. There are two bulky bases. Usually I use potassium terbutoxide. I'm going to give you an option here that lithium diisopropyl amide, LDA, is an excellent choice as well. That's a bulky base that will affect that. Now what I would like to do is I would like to put the bromide out on the terminal end. HBr iron peroxide again. Ashley, thank you. I like this. I'm getting contributions from everybody. Loving it. You guys are doing great. Okay, let's make the Grignard. So that one's just magnesium metal. We'll react the Grignard, this time one with formaldehyde, and then two with dilute acid. This is where we bring in our one carbon. We make the new bond. I after making that one bond, we go back and we check. We do have to oxidize it up to the aldehyde. So I need a reagent, which is going to allow me to oxidize that up to the aldehyde and stop without going to the carboxylic acid. Swern would work. Yes, Ashley, good. You can write Swern. You don't have to write out the entire reagent. It's good to know what the reagent is that is Swern, but you don't need to write it all out. Just in the same way that it's good to know what Jones looks like with chromic acid, but you don't have to write it all out. You can just write Jones. And I'll let you get away with that. Be aware that sometimes I will write out the reagents though when I give it to you in a scheme. So recognizing the reagents is sometimes good, is important. Okay. So that was a good one. I mean, that showed us the pattern and that we were doing a one carbon and that that one carbon was using a formaldehyde pattern. Let's see a slightly more complicated one. I like 9, 8 or 10. Yeah, I was looking at 8, I'm looking at 10. 10's not any harder. 10 is one where we make an ether out of it, a Williamson. 9 is got a challenge in it. 9 is interesting. Let's look at 9 real quick. This might put us over on time, but 9 is a beautiful little challenge. The challenge in these problems is really to find the similarity between them, not the differences. Okay, so the five-membered ring system clearly is there. This one carbon is still there. But then things happen. This is new. This guy is lost. We got rid of the CH2 group that was there. And the alcohol, what we have is a new bond and a new group that has been added in. And so this group up here is new as well. And if a point is a point of attachment. And so it looks like we need to break this bond. And then we also need to get rid of that guy and break that bond. And we need to come up with sort of an order and a sequencing that makes sense in order to do this. So if we think about what needs to happen, there's some conflicts. We could look at doing this job first and this job second, or the other way around. So we don't know which of these to do first, second, in terms of the jobs that we need to do. But one thing can be seen, and that is that when we break this, that we're probably going to have a negative charge. And remember, the positive charge always goes with the oxygen end when we break the bond. So that sets up our electrophile and our nucleophile. Now, when we look at it this way, what we can see is that now we have a clear problem. These two groups are incompatible. Those are two groups that react together. And so we can't have that second oxygen there being in place when we do when we make that bond. And so what that's going to necessitate is the order in which we do things. The double bond will still have to be in place, and we'll have to react with that double bond after we do this other piece up here. And so we'll leave the double bond alone, and we will actually do this piece first and this piece second in order to protect it. So I think that this requires a full retrosynthesis to be able to see how it goes together, to see how to resolve these differences. So let's do that. But we have a planning of how this is going to happen, how this is going to go back together. So when I say second, what I mean is going in the forwards direction, this thing is going to be done second. That means that when I'm going in the reverse direction, this is the first thing that I need to tackle going in the reverse direction. So I'm going to envision that I'm going to take this back to a double bond, because I can use ozonolysis to be able to split that thing off and to get the aldehyde. From there, I will then do the functional group disconnect, disconnecting this, bringing in this piece as a Grignard, and the other piece as the positive charge. And that guy is the synthon for the two carbon chain. So notice that the positive charge is on one, the oxygen is on one. There's two carbons overall. I use the oxygen to close it up to give me the partial positive that makes the electrophile, and that is the aldehyde pattern. Now I need to worry about, how did I get that Grignard there when I had an alcohol there? Well, the way that I think this through in my brain is I say, where do Grignards come from? Grignards had to come from alkyl halides. The Grignard had to come from the bromide. That's how you make a Grignard. And then where did that bromide come from? Can I get to a bromide from an alcohol? Is there a reaction that allows me to convert a hydroxyl group directly into a bromide? And the answer is, yeah, we've got a couple of them now, actually. PBr3 is probably the easiest one. And this synthesis is now solved. So now you give me the reagents, I'll put it together in the forward direction. I take the alcohol and I first convert it into the bromide. PBr3, JC, thank you. I then take and convert it into the Grignard. From the Grignard, I would like to convert it into the addition where I create the alcohol. So what am I using to do that now? We may not have the name. We can go back and we can look at what that molecule looks like. It is an aldehyde. This one with two carbons is actually called acetaldehyde. Or ethanol is the other name for that. So we would do one acetaldehyde or ethanol. And then what do I need for reagent two in order to finish this out? Dilute acid, yeah. Okay, last step. What I would like to do is I would like to end this out in the aldehyde. And it requires two steps, two reagents. I'm splitting off the double bond, throwing away the CH2 group there. So the other component that's going to be created here is I'm also going to create an equivalent of formaldehyde, which is a gas. And that gas is going to leave the reaction vessel. So that's what's getting thrown away. But how do I do that? It's ozonolysis and DMS. 1, O3. And then 2, dimethyl sulfide is DMS. That is correct. Or zinc in water is also the other reductive workup. It needs to be a reductive. If you do oxidative, you'll wind up with a carboxylic acid there. And so we're looking for a reductive workup. And those are the two reductive workups, BB. That's good. Okay, how did that look? Hopefully you're starting to feel a little more comfortable with seeing these now in a way of working through them and breaking down. And you can see that I use different techniques, that sometimes I'm doing a full retrosynthesis. Sometimes I'm doing a pre-planning step before I launch into my full retrosynthesis. That sometimes that pre-planning of just knowing how it's going to break down, looking for conflicts, sorting out the conflicts, deciding which you're going to deal with first and which you're going to deal with second, or if you need a protecting group. And then that's what I call the sequencing step. And then after you sequence it, figuring out what's going to happen first, second, or third, then doing your full retro and then launching into your full synthesis. So those are kind of my big steps of how I go through these. All right, that was kind of a lot, but I think that was good. And it gives you a much better idea of how to use that sheet. And there's lots more problems on that sheet for you to go through. So look at the pattern that I established and then try to use that pattern. And there might be one or two little minor errors on the sheet in the answer key. If you hit one, email me and then I'll send out an email to the entire group. Just let everybody know if there happens to be one, and I'll verify it for you if we find any. But I think that's it. I think that's everything I want to do today. I'm going to go ahead and open up that exam. I think I'll try and do that tonight and get it up so that it's up for tomorrow. We'll leave it up through the weekend and give you guys through the weekend to go ahead and do it. I think I'll make it due like next Tuesday. Give you enough time to coordinate, work together and get that done. Okay. That's everything I've got. If there's any questions, you guys are welcome to stay on the line. Yes, JC, you guys can work together. I'm encouraging you to work together as always. Same thing, same rules apply. I'm not changing the rules on you. We'll keep those same rules going. And thank you, Kendra. AJ, stay on the line if you want to chat for a minute, or anybody else who wants to chat for a minute, welcome to stay on the line. I'm going to go ahead and end the recording, let you guys go, and then we're going to get me out of this chair pretty quickly. All right, you guys take care. Any questions, you guys can always email me, remember that. And I'm also on the Discord, so you can also shoot me a message on the Discord and I'll get back to you pretty quickly if I see that pop up. Unless it's like really late at night, and then I might ignore it until the morning. We'll see. All right. Take care, you guys.